Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the UAW Factory Whistle Show for this October 24th. We have Jimmy and we have Scotty. And take it away, fellas.
All right. Hey, how are we all doing?
Doing great on this, Scott.
All right. Hey, so I think who's in the chat room. If you want to talk, dial in and press 1. Just press 1 and you'll come into the show if you want to talk. I think Brian was going to be here. I'm sure Adrian was going to be here. I don't know. So this week's been a lot of buzz going on with, of course, what's happened with John Deere. And I'm hoping that they kept their health care and they're going to get something else. But I hope they don't get Volvo'd. I hope the UAW actually steps up and negotiates a decent contract for them. That's my hope. Are they capable of doing it? I'm really not sure, Don. I don't know about you, Jim, but
they're capable. I don't think the question is, will they?
Yeah. All right.
And I don't. You know, until they do it, I don't believe it.
Well,
exactly.
Right.
I've had a lot of shit being said on the internet, you know, well, the one-party system worked before. And I'll give you kudos. If you read the history, yeah, the way it is with the delegates worked fine until we opened the 79 agreement and along came jointness and appointed jobs, our company sitting on the board of directors. When that can of shit opened up, you might as well say that one-party system wasn't for the brothers and sisters that I truly love. Take it back, Scott.
I agree.
You say
we've come so far removed.
Thank you. Let me get Brian on. You guys, hang on. You're spinning Brian. Brian, you're on.
All right. You guys go ahead. I'm just listening.
Okay.
Okay. We've come so far removed from where we've been to where we're at now, that a lot of these new people who've hired in the last 10 years don't realize everything that they've lost about even being there. Just don't. You know what I mean? And all the plants that have closed. This morning when I was putting my boots on, I was there and thought about it, and I heard about the clip it. A snippet on the news that there's going to be a shortage of fake Christmas trees. And the first thought I had, well, gee, if we made that in the United States, we wouldn't have a shortage of anything, would we? But union jobs have gone, and it doesn't seem as though people have realized the importance that a union job holds within their community.
Yeah.
And the people at John Deere, some of them are third generations, they understand the importance, and they've seen the decline in what the UAW has led them down to.
Right. Scott, are you in the are you in the chat room, rather?
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to read that? Let me get Paul on. Go ahead and read what the Consulting Solutions have read or wrote.
Curious. This is in the JLM Consulting Solutions. Says, curious. Do your employees raise concerns over new trailers showing up in a yard? Concern was because they're loaded. Possible to shed insight into how this would violate contracting in general. If it does, I have a whistleblow.
Yeah.
Whenever we're on strike, it appears the corporation always tries to get vehicles or manufacture one of the goods that we're producing and tries to get them out because they don't think that they need the union workers. Excuse me. And a lot of times they'll bring in scab workers. And they bring in the scab workers, and they're unable to do the job because they haven't had the training. They don't understand the process, whatever. So they try to sneak stuff out. I mean, they did that with General Motors with the dies. They're with Jimmy and the old metal fab. They tried building vehicles in Flint. Management did. They failed miserably. It could be a possible thing. It would definitely be a sticking point, I would think. It would be a good point to bring up in negotiations that you're trying to get stuff out. You say you don't really need us, then why are you trying to sneak stuff out of the plant? You know what I mean? The product's out. Well, evidently, you need it pretty bad. I don't know. I'll look at your contract. It is a strike, and the corporation's going to try to get goods out. They are, and they'll go across the picket line to do it, too. Don't think it's – I don't know what the state law is out there. It's in Illinois.
Well, you've seen what that
is it illegal?
Didn't you, Scott?
Pardon?
You've seen what that district court judge Relita Grieve put an order into effect for the people of Davenport around the deer plant. They're only allowed to have four people on the picket line at a time. They put unreasonable stuff there. I mean, you know, like I said, if you look and people ask me, well, how can you have faith in the system we have now? I can have faith. I look at the Chrysler workers. They turned their contract down. What was it in 14? They got shit brought back. GM went out for how long? If they don't, and everybody knows if they'd have stayed out one more week, GM would have had to come to the table. Okay, we look what they did to Volvo. Now we're looking away to John Deere. I'm beginning to believe you're right. They're not capable of negotiating for the people, their membership, period.
Right, right. I mean, they did the people in Belvedere. We're doing it, Deere. What about Volvo? What did they do with them? They brought them back the three contracts, same contract, three times. Forced them to go back on the last one. No, I don't think they're capable of negotiating a contract.
Local 434 is in the chat room, and maybe he can answer that question, Consulting Solutions. And we have Carrie, and we do have Paul.
Greetings to the Rabble Rousers.
Greetings, sir.
Here's a clue to the new workers as to what you've lost. I saw a commercial on TV that Lear, a UAW plant, my local, was advertising for workers for $14 an hour. Okay, that's a union UAW plant. 2 weeks ago, McDonald's up in Traverse City was advertising a starting wage of $21 an hour. So apparently our union leadership is not capable of bargaining a wage that's competitive with what a fast food restaurant pays.
Well, that's
the clue to the new workers that you get to pay union dues and make two-thirds of what you can make as a fast food worker without a union. But the problem is really the system. It's the people that are negotiating for us. You know, the thing is we don't have people that are capable of bargaining for us because the problem is with all the nepotism in our system, they take – young people who are related to current staff members, and after a few months, they move them up on international staff. They don't even know what it's like to work in a plant, let alone how to bargain for us. And that's why we need this direct election of our officers that had put a stop to this. they wouldn't be able to just stick their kids and their grandkids and their next door neighbor on international staff because it would become a big issue and they'd get voted out of office. And
well, this is the thing, though. With the direct voting, it is only for the president, the vice president, the International Executive Board, and the regional reps. So
right.
Basically, we would have to go into the Constitution or the bylaws and basically state or change the process to where there's no longer any type of appointed positions unless it's maybe the president or the vice president's secretary or something like that. But outside of that, there shouldn't be no other appointed positions.
Well, the appointed positions are not as much a problem as what the goals of the appointed positions are. You know, the thing is, these people should be working on our behalf. Instead, they're working on management's behalf. The Articles of Confederation, or whatever you call them, for the for jointness, are set up so it's everything is geared toward management's needs and none of it's geared toward the needs of the workforce.
Well, see, that's where we need to, you know, the unions got to separate themselves from the joint ventures and team concepts because, I mean, it hasn't done anything to stop jobs from going out of the country or concessions or even job losses. So let the company run their own businesses. We get paid to follow a job description, that's all we need to be focused on.
Well, that's it. I've often said your job is just to show up to work when you're supposed to be there and do your job as it's written up. Don't give them any more information. You know, they get paid the big bucks to figure out how to screw you. These people shouldn't be showing management what to do in these team meetings, how they can add to increase workloads and whatever. Our workforce needs to be reeducated. They need to start thinking about their own welfare rather than the welfare of the company.
Right. And see, that's one of the issues with John Deere is that kit. So depending on how many pieces they kick out per day, they make extra money from doing that, but
mm-hmm.
it's killing off jobs.
Yeah.
And What's stopping John Deere management from later on taking the monetary part of that out of that language and expecting you to meet 125% every single day?
Yeah. Well, that's what they've basically done in plants like the Flint Metal Center. They used to have standards there, and people work like dogs to get done early, and then management got the parts they wanted, but then they were upset because people were getting done early. And the thing is, we need to get away from these, I wouldn't call them one-sided agreements. They're really two-sided agreements. They benefit management, and they benefit the our upper union leadership, but they don't benefit the worker in the plant floor at all.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
So has everybody gotten their ballots yet in the mail?
I haven't.
Yeah, I got mine Friday.
Okay, I didn't get mine yet, but
I talked to a guy
who got one. Told he works at the Flint Truck and Bus. I told him what he should do and to go talk to all his coworkers about it.
Mine's in the mailbox already, so I supported the direct vote. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Anybody with common sense will do the same because I've seen a lot of comments by other people, some of them most likely being part of the staff of
mm-hmm.
the Solidarity House.
Yeah.
And, they were trying to convince people to stay with the delegate system.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how long is the membership going to allow these people to keep lying to them and deceiving them? I mean, We've lost enough jobs. We've seen enough plant closings. We've seen enough indictments. We've seen enough concessions. Enough of letting these people sit in there trying to bamboozle you and continuing to support a delegate system that no longer works.
Yeah.
So, I think the direct vote is the way to go. And, I mean, if, unless you want to keep losing, that's up to you. But I think direct quote is the way to go.
Right. Well, it's the thing is, it is a system that at one time did work. It worked until jointness. And it hasn't
right.
has worked in about
right.
40 years, really.
That is right.
It's worked well for our leadership. They've managed to get some astronomical pay raises and get their kids on international staff. They bargain pay cuts for, you know, for the workforce, but fat benefits for themselves. And, you know, I hope people are listening out there. Many UAW members that are second and third generation will encourage their parents and grandparents to take the time to vote on this, because it's the only voice they're ever going to get. You know, retirees don't really have a voice in the UAW because they're not well organized, and probably the last 20 years, most of the people that have retired, other than ones that have been taken care of, are really disgusted with the union and don't vote in local elections anymore. Once they walked out the door, that was the end of their involvement.
So, I mean, I saw an article from WQAD that the UAW negotiators are holding meetings and they're booking rooms at a Moline hotel at the hotel. Wow. So it's we're negotiating it in a hotel room, or well, I should say in a not really in a hotel room, but in a hotel. In one of the banquet
rooms.
It
very well could be in the hotel room. I'm sure they got their knee pads on.
Oh, well, it's usually what they do. They go to some decent place. I think our contracts should all be bargained in the middle of the plant. Just let them sit there and see what it's like to deal with the noise and the grease and the, you know, see what the working conditions are.
Good
I mean,
idea.
Look at who's on strike right now, guys. I mean, you got many different fascists and memberships are on strike right now, and they're all fighting the same thing. You know, they're adding tears to everything now. We got to stop this. They're dividing the workforce so they can conquer us as a whole, man. Lincoln said it best. You know, in our case, a divided membership. We're going to fall. We're going to continue to make felons, too, is my prediction. Take it.
Yeah, this system we have now will just continue to breed corruption, because everybody who's currently in international office, they were basically groomed by the people that went to jail. So they're going to have the same ethic.
Hmm. Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah. Scott, did you get my message?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I answered your message.
So,
does anybody know and spreading the gospel like they were trying to get permission from the monitor? I haven't heard anything back from Holderson if the monitor approved that. In fact, I'm going to wait until Tuesday here. If I don't get a ballot by Tuesday, I think I'll hit the panic button and ask them where the hell mine's at, because I haven't got mine. Well,
I think if you haven't got your ballot by Monday, you need to call Monday after lunch by noontime.
Right. As soon as my mail runs on Monday, if I don't have it, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Call and email.
We're looking for that area code if they will press 1 so they could join the conversation.
You're saying 407. There's no 407, Scott.
What, the call in? I thought it was
there's a four. There's a four. Hold on. There's a 470, and the person just pushed one. Hang on.
There you go. I'm sorry. I might got a little dyslexic. I'm sorry.
Okay, 407 Hi. Or 470, you're on.
Hi there. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
Good. Hello.
Hi. So I happened to notice one of the posts in the Dear page. My husband is a union member. And being in logistics and senior leadership in prior companies, I happen to work very closely with a lot of organizations in their supply chain. And so one of the concerns was that there's trailers that had arrived in a yard that could potentially be loaded. And there's no claim as to knowing if it is or is not. But I wanted to bring something to the table to share some insights. As I understand that supply chain international, right, and what's going on there may not be something that all the members are aware of, right? And so what's been happening through COVID, it all started but then. Supply chains and large conglomerates and organizations realized that over the years, ever since Toyota came out with their Six Sigma plan, right, where everything was all about lean manufacturing, and reducing the spend, right, and overhead, and increasing their revenues ultimately. And so with that, they decided that, or not they in general, but organizations, right, decided that they would lean their processing and their shipping. And so from that, what happened, why you saw toilet paper and all of the necessities, especially the parts that you manufacture or need to manufacture, delays was because of the supply chain building up lean practices. So when COVID happened, the international shipping, right, kind of, you know, space was dropped, our countries weren't shipping. And so the companies realized that sourcing overseas and storing goods overseas and bringing it here last minute for like JIT processes are no longer efficient, right, because they lack business resiliency. They were unable to move fast enough during challenging times, right, to get goods here so that we can manufacture in the U.S. and finish our goods or even deliver finished goods to the commerce. And so from that, what organizations are doing now and what you're seeing in Southern California on the news has everything to do with the storage, right? The labor that is on the terminals works as hard as they can, right? They are their union, and they bust their butts to offload those ships. The challenges that they have, the constraints, fall in line with what is more of the terminals, right, not having the ability to store goods. So what corporations have done is they have either sourced direct contracting or vendor contracting to obtain yards. And in those yards, they're storing loaded containers and trailers in the yards because there's not enough truckers that can take them to their final destination and also pull the containers out of the port timely. And so this is something that I feel that the members, right, within the union should be aware of, mainly because there is a challenge, right, with your contracting and goods being stored, then this is something that should be questioned when you start seeing containers arrive randomly in yards or you're seeing an influx of containers coming in from a certain area or yard. That's something that you should be aware of and you should definitely call out or question to the international team because it is happening. They have nowhere to put these containers that are suddenly coming in. There's over 100 ships at anchor in LA alone. And it happens everywhere. That's just the only port that we have that's the massivest in the U.S. So go ahead.
I think a lot of us workers who come from parts plants and got shuffled around are highly aware what those containers come because it was a job that we used to manufacture. So we're aware they're they took all our work overseas. But it's kind of funny to me that these big corporations are scuffling around when most of the stuff was made, when I hired in, was made right here, and they could go to the plant and airlift them, the parts that they need, and have them within to the assembly plants or to the plant within an hour to 2 hour time.
Be consistent. Correct. So they took the jobs out of the country. So, now you're going to give me a bleeding heart on how it's going to come back in the country and to defend you and your corporate. I whore horse shit. Pay some taxes.
The top 40 companies don't
pay shit, woman.
Yeah, I got no heart for them. They're reaping what they sowed. You wanted that cheap labor over there? Look at what you got.
It's not just cheap labor, it's basically slave labor.
You're exactly right. And this is not something that is more so towards their supply chain and the disruption that it's causing. It's more so a call out, right, for the challenges and hindrances that they're facing that basically shows that you guys have an upper advantage too, right? More so than you thought you had. One, you may potentially, and I don't know each, you know, contract, right, but you may potentially have a breach in your contract if that is a breach, right, for them storing goods and not enabling work for the people. But I don't know, preventing work, right?
Well, just-in-time delivery actually gives the union a weapon if you have competent people negotiating for you. We haven't had that, you know, because basically you don't have weeks of parts stored up. You can put the hurt to a company pretty quickly.
Yes.
But the thing is, the goal of the UAW isn't to hurt the company. It's to work with a company, and in the process of working with a company, they've been putting a hurt to their workers. I mean, General Motors eliminated about 90% of their workforce, speed up something the union used to fight. Now they cooperate with a speed up through continuous improvement. They're basically working the crap out of people.
Or is our Caterpillar? It went from Caterpillar to John Deere, and from John Deere it spread outward, was the tier system. Dennis Williams introduced that tier system, and Caterpillar went over to John Deere to help the corporation out.
Yeah. Getting back to our voting system, our convention system for international leaders, when I went to the last convention I went to where Dennis Williams was elected, I was the only delegate from Region C and D that voted for his opponent, Gary Wachowicz. They were just a bunch of bobbleheads. Dennis Williams was a horrible president, and the thing is, he was pretty much unanimously elected. There was just a handful of us that voted for Gary. That's another reason why we need direct voting, so we don't end up with people being elected like that without being scrutinized.
The dog and pony show.
That's it. How many positions are there in the International Executive Board?
The main one?
Yeah.
President? 3 vice presidents, financial secretary,
and
5.
Okay.
And then you've got regional directors.
Yeah, and they're pretty much all elected by acclamation because of this convention system.
Right. The convention system literally lets them hand the baton on to whoever they cherry pick or hand pick to be their successor.
Everybody's elected by voice vote, so when you go into your regional meeting, And here's the guy that's their national wants for your next regional director, and they ask if anybody else wants to run. Nobody's going to run against them because nobody's going to vote for you because there's no secret ballot.
Right. It should be a referendum ballot, the referendum
right.
vote.
I mean, you could have a horrible committee man, but mm-hmm. if your committee man was elected the same way, most committee men would be elected by acclamation because people would be afraid that they'd become targeted if they voted against the guy and he still won.
Right.
And that's what you face at the convention over only a much larger scale.
Called retribution.
Right.
And it's unfair, it's unjust, and it's unbecoming.
Right.
Unbecoming of a union brother and sister.
And it's also the reason we have the bad contracts we have and all our jobs have evaporated.
Yeah. I mean, I understand we're not going to be able to maybe stop the corporations from closing their plants. I understand that. But it is in our contract, which means at some point you agreed to the closing of these plants.
Right. Well, we're asked to vote on it.
Yeah. Well, see, that's just it. A lot of times you vote on a contract, and just in the last two contracts, have we been able to see the white pages? Because see, when you get to the back of the book and the white pages, that's
mm-hmm.
where all the papers that are not to be published are at.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the letters and the notes you want to look at. You know.
But if you read a newspaper, they'll tell you at contract time that GM's going to close certain plants, you know, and it's part of the contract. It's in the media.
Yeah, it makes you wonder how they knew about it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, they get notified before we do.
Yes,
I've seen that tax abatement Ford got received for putting that plant down there in Tennessee, didn't you, or Kentucky? $883 million with an M, people, dollars tax deferral to put that plant down there.
Wow.
Let's go, Brandon.
So,
some shit.
With the lady that called in from her husband's at Ed Deere, did you have any ideas of what we could do to help John Deere out?
I'm sorry, did I have any what? I apologize.
Any ideas on how we could help John Deere out?
Yeah, my recommendations would be to start getting to the inventory, right? Focus on what you're seeing in the yards. It seems as though the community is very tight-knit, especially up in Iowa, Ohio, you know, the Midwest region. And it seems as though, you know, you guys are very observant to what's coming in and out. And so my recommendation would be to try to get as much proof of that you have. And then I would start questioning it. Supply chain is big in the news. Maybe drop notes over. I know Jonah Furman. I have reached out to him. We only need to know the direct violation, right, in order for him to pick it up. So that's something, if you guys know it, send him a note. He's aware of what I've been saying from my side. And then I feel that could also give you guys an elevation. Any kind of, you know, with contracting now, while I'm not specific on union law, I am specific on, you know, the industry that I'm in. And in contracting, right, you know, most organizations hold very highly the legalities of contracting. It's unfortunate to see the darker side, right, and what I'm seeing everyone go through now with their union labor contracts. But I will say that you know, if you can find a, if you can prove that they violated it, nobody wants that violation of a contract, right? Especially when we hold integrity in our business. So I would definitely give notice to that. Definitely start raising noise to it and questioning that and trying to tie it in. Since it's a hot topic right now in the media, I feel that that could also lead into to other conversations, right, and pressing towards the deer side. To give them the negative light that it seems that you guys, you know, believe that they need, and to get the buy-in of the people, right, and to keep their interest wavered on your side.
That's a good idea. I mean, these guys are all out of the picket line. They're seeing who's trying to come across their picket line or not, you know, and hopefully it, you know, it's somebody that's a union driver, and they're not going to, or they have some morals, and they're not going to cross a picket line.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, most truck, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all people, right? At the end of the day, I feel all American workers are tired. I was in a white-collar position working 80 hours a week. My team was working 65 hours a week. It's unsustainable, right, at the end of the day. Only for what? Eventually to be replaced, right? And let go as if your work never matters. So I feel that you know, now is a good time. It really is. And for the people, right? For us workers in general, and that our voice can be heard and that we can create and drive change. And the key would be to focus on inefficiencies, right, where there were failures and where wrongdoing transpired, and keep it very factual. And I feel that, I mean, who can argue against facts, right? If a violation of a contract was broken and exactly what it was, there's no argument there.
Right, right. Well, we'll just do what we can do. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, and yeah, brothers and sisters are out there that are holding the line, trying to better themselves, and rightfully so.
And you know, when you look at John Deere's situation of them bringing those salary people in there that had no experience and they were kind of basically half-ass trained, you know, if the lower half of the salary people and the union people would stick together and walk out, there's no way these companies can run. And
right.
it ain't just the SBUs and the skilled trades and the hourly getting screwed, but depending on your pay grade and the salary position, they're getting screwed as well, because once about a time, they used to get a full pension and they used to get health care. They no longer get pensions, and now they got to pay for their own health care. So, you know, it's something that the salary people should, you know, really think about. Of walking out of John Deere at this point right now and stand side by side with the union members, because they are totally getting screwed too. And what you guys already talked about is them working 7 days a week. Now that they're doing basically union work, they're going to be working 7 days a week. How many hours? 10 hours a day?
One good thing, they'll get a feel for what the work really is.
Well, that's true, but, I mean, is it really sustainable?
No, it's not.
I mean, people were already getting hurt on the first day. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm really surprised that OSHA's not up in these facilities right now. Because none of them have been properly trained.
Right.
And you got to know
right.
That's a clear violation. So what's going on with that situation? It kind of baffles me. That here it is that John Deere can you know, go to court, get their lawyers and go to court and, you know, get them for basically they were saying, what were they saying? They were blocking the gates. They were blocking traffic.
They got that orders, Brian. I already, her name, it's a district court judge out there. I believe her name would be pronounced Merlita Greve, G-R-E-V-E. And she put out an order and signed it that only four people can be at the gate and they can't stop any traffic.
Yeah, but how is that constitutional?
It's
well,
not.
Well, what's the union done about it? Have they gone to court to get rid of the order?
The union's saying they're going to honor the order. That's what I'm saying. And like I said, if you look, it's just – it's all the unions are going on strike right now. This is – I mean, it's sad what they're allowing to happen right now because we keep giving up a little bit. Well, on the bottom end, they're giving up a hell of a lot. So it's wrong. They got to quit dividing
the work. This is the thing. So the company's able to get in an injunction. I'm the local, but here we're told – that we can't wildcat, we can't do slowdowns, we can't strike, we can't do this, we can't do that. I mean, if everything is, as far as law is going to sit there and back the company, and they're going to continue to deteriorate the middle class, how is it that in the best interest of this country? Because without a strong middle class and our purchasing power, You don't have a strong economy, and you don't have a strong dollar.
Well, if the wages continue to deteriorate in our industry, they won't be able to find a workforce. Because if you can make more money as a waiter or a waitress, that's the way you're going to go.
Well, not so just
only
that.
Gets
I mean,
the sorriest of people to work for them.
I mean, what do you think is going to happen? So here it is, the Solidarity House is going ahead and they're going to support this injunction on the local. So are they going to support the mandatory vaccine too? And then people are going to start getting fired? And what do you think is going to happen to union dues and the membership? I'm just saying, because I'm not getting the vaccination, they're going to have to fire me.
You're going to have anarchy, which you're going to have.
There you go.
What?
Something's got to get.
Well, you got. What was it? The
or
people.
They're going to have
the
people in there going postal.
Yeah. Well,
government's overstepping their bounds on this one.
Yeah. Well, then the workers at GE all worked out. Walked out Thursday. That's solidarity.
Yep,
that's solidarity.
So why ain't we doing it? So you know, I mean, everybody seems to be worried about this injunction, or they're worried about slowdowns, or wildcat strikes. I mean, why are we worried about these things? What are they going to do? Arrest 400,000 union members? I mean,
right,
it is crippled this economy.
Well, the problem we have in the UAW is the way our contracts are set up, they undermine solidarity.
They
you
do.
Know, union members, when management pulled crap on them, used to resist. Now we're told we need to cooperate because the unions bargain this stuff into our contract. And on top of that, you know, when they hire people, they want to make sure they're not getting rabble rousers. They screen people to see if they're willing and able to work in teams and all that kind of stuff.
And I'm not disagreeing with you, Paul, but my question is this. When the union was created in 1935, it was created through what? Through violence.
It was created to resist management.
A lot of union brothers and sisters had died to create this union because these companies did not support labor. They did not support pensions. They didn't support health care, good wages, any of those things back then. And
yeah.
So the membership, it fought for those things, and a lot of people bled and died.
Sure.
And I've always said that we need to go through the Solidarity House gate. The only thing that stands between us and what we get in these tentative agreements is our leadership. If we're
right.
not going to confront our leadership, then we're screwing ourselves. And sometimes, I'm just going to be truthful. A lot of people bled and died for this union, and sometimes violence is necessary.
Hear, hear.
Well, the National Labor Relations Act was put together, I think it says something, so that we can band together for mutual defense or common defense. The problem now is, what are we going to do to, that was defense against the corporations. Now our problem is, what are we going to do as workers and retirees to defend ourselves against our union leadership?
Okay,
they're the ones that are agreeing to give everything away.
And I agree. And that's why, you know, sometimes just because it's law doesn't make it right. And sometimes you just got to skirt it. I mean, you just got to get around it. And when it comes down to the leadership, we have to confront that leadership. And the way to confront that leadership is through, one, through the direct voting. Two, is by organizing out in front of every region and out in front of the Solidarity House. That's how you take care of that. Because just like they show up to our locals, every tentative agreement, and they threaten the membership, you either support this thing or you won't have a job tomorrow. Well, we need to get up to the regions and to the Solidarity House and say, you either support our interests or you're not going to have a job tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because we are going to physically remove you.
Yeah.
I mean, none of that. Hey, look, if we're going to go with that soft mindset, we're going to continue to lose.
Every single time.
Yeah, every single time. They wrote the laws. They wrote the UAW Constitution to protect them. It wasn't set up for us. That's why we continue to lose. Even when we were all pushing for Articles 30, 31, and 8. I mean, you know how difficult it was to meet that? And we didn't even get close to meeting it.
Sure.
We got the locals, but we didn't get the percentage of the membership.
Right.
So I'm just saying, it wasn't set up for us to win. So the only way we're going to win is by physically confronting the issue, which is the leadership. We got to physically confront it. And I'm not afraid to do that. If everybody else is, that's on them. So when our families get sold out and our way of life, and the ones that are going to be coming in after us get sold out, then what? You think you're scared now because you refuse to stand up to your leadership. Wait until you lose everything you busted your ass to get. Mm-hmm. All in the name to make the company profits.
Well, essentially, they have lost it all. You know, when I hired in, I could get in and get out at 30 and out. I had pension. I had health care. I, at least for most of my time at General Motors, I had protection from work speed ups, and you don't have any of that now.
I'm referring to is until you lost the roof over your house, food in your cabinets, and everything else, you haven't lost it all yet. We still have a chance to flip this. We still have chance to get control of our leadership, the Solidarity House, in our union, and get this union back on its foundation. But we have to confront it physically. It's the only way it's going to happen, because I don't know what's going to happen with this direct voting, whether it's going to pass or not. It looks like it would, I would hope. But hypothetically saying it don't, then what? Then what do we do? Do we just sit on our hands and do nothing? What's the next
move? Well,
we
need to continue to organize. You have to build a political apparatus to fight a political machine. You know, it sounds like that's in the beginning stage anyway. You can't go down the convention and just complain. Let's say if we keep the current corrupt system, you can't go down there with maybe one rabble-rouser running for president or regional director or whatever. You have to have a team. They have to be well-organized. See, that's the difference between us and the people in power. Those people are absolutely shameless. I have a hard time, you know. When I've run for office, I've gotten a couple donations from people, but I just pay for it all myself. We're not, as a group, as a bunch of people who are the resistance, we don't have that mindset.
Yeah, but
and
see,
that's
this
something
is the
we
thing,
have
Paul.
To overcome.
This is the thing. Everybody is putting money into what needs to be done. It doesn't have to be money. It could be, like I said, a lot of people died, bled and died for this union. This union was founded because of violence through the companies, and we defended ourselves. What is stopping us today from doing the same thing that we've done back then? Because money is not going to fix the situation, and I'm just going to be real with you. You said you supported Gary Wachowicz three times at the last three conventions, and all three times Gary lost because of the way the whole system is set up. It's a controlled atmosphere. It was designed for them to win and not outsiders like maybe Gary or myself.
Right.
So my thing is, if we keep playing by their rules, we're going to continue to lose. So the only way to go and challenge this is by physically challenging it face to face, because money's not going to fix it.
No, I'm just saying it takes money to run for union office, whatever office it is. And these people are real good at organizing caucuses or slates. And we haven't done that.
Hold on, we got a lot of people on the switchboard. If you'd like to join the conversation or add anything, push 1 on your keypad and I'll get you right on. Go ahead.
My point is this, Paul. I've been running this UAW Real Talk for quite a few years. And, you know, when it comes to social media, it's a great tool. It's a great tool to have. And on top of that, they came out with the Facebook Live, which is another great tool. You know how many people know me through the Facebook Live alone? I mean, think about that. I mean, that's a form of campaigning.
Right.
People know me through social media. The Solidarity House knows me from me going down to the Solidarity House and banging on Bob King's car when he was coming out the gate, or confronting Dennis Williams out in front of the Solidarity House. That's how they know me. I physically confronted them. But as far as campaigning, I'm doing it through social media, and I'm reaching a lot of people. So whether it be Facebook, it be Google, there's all kinds of ways to do it without using money.
Well,
the only thing that you might have to do, okay, I mean, even with literature, I mean, I printed up my flyers the last time I ran against Gary Jones at the convention, and I went to the print shop, the union print shop on Gross Spec. I printed my flyers, I printed it up enough as I can possibly print without the help of other people. But my thing is, social media is free. Facebook Live is free. You reach a lot of people. They're going to ask you questions. And, I mean, this is real time. So these people are asking you questions while you're making these Facebook Lives, and you're able to answer their questions. Some questions you can't answer, because the reality is you don't want to give up your gameplay, your tactics on how you do things, because you don't want management aware of how you do things. I'm a little unorthodox, so I don't like to put all my game plans out there, but and on top of that, we're not behind doors with management in the Solidarity House. So there's some things that we can't answer because we don't know what took place behind closed doors. But I think Facebook Live is a great tool. I've reached a lot of people through it. On top of that, even with YouTube, I've done, and this is how well it works. Back in 2012, when I made that video, UAW International, do they work for their members or Wall Street? That video worked so good on YouTube reaching people, it reached the Solidarity House, and it reached Chrysler headquarters. They sent their lawyers, HR, and corporate from the headquarters all the way down the center line to pull me off the floor. That's how well that video worked. That's why I'm saying it didn't cost me a penny.
Right.
But it got their attention, didn't it?
Oh, sure.
So there you go. That's how you campaign, using what you can use. Social media is free. Use it. It don't cost us nothing, right? You're considered a protected activity. That's one of your rights. Take advantage of what we got, what tools we got, and utilize them. If we're going to sit there and focus on stuff we don't have control over, then we're going to continue to lose. Just utilize what we have is all I'm saying. But me confronting, but me confronting Bob King, or me confronting Dennis Williams, believe me when I tell you, it got their attention. And when me and Omar confronted them when we were out there filming that at the last convention, when they were sitting there eating caviar and steak and all that, that got their attention too, because me and Omar got surrounded by the staff.
Well, so let's hope we don't have to go through all that, and we get this direct vote.
I'm not saying it's the first thing that we need to do. I'm just saying it might come down to that's what we have to do, and I just don't want the membership thinking that, you know, I mean, we're limited on what we can do, because we're not.
Now, are the retirees getting that same ballot as well, Brian?
Yes.
Yeah, everybody's getting the ballot.
Same one.
Even retirees?
Yes.
Right.
Every member.
I got a problem with that.
Why would you? Yeah, why would you?
No, my problem is if they're allowed to get that ballot, they should be allowed to vote when a contract comes up.
They said no, the national agreement won't let us in on that. Mark, that was because of that Diva thing I think that was because of how Diva worked out. When we got into the Viva with the union side, that took out the retirees' vote, I believe. Wasn't it how they worded that?
No, that was way before that.
Yeah.
Said we couldn't vote on a contract.
But this is my thing. If the retirees can't vote, why do they let temps vote? Because there's nothing contractually in the contract for temps outside that they can't be harassed.
And Lisa, I tried to appeal the contract 2 times ago with that. And the answer came from the Public Review Board, which I was not even invited to my own hearing, was that they're not going to disenfranchise the temporary workers because they pay dues. My counter was, well, so do the retirees. But when it comes to the labor laws, they can't negotiate solely for the retirees. They can negotiate for the active worker. And that's why the retirees are not allowed to vote on the contracts, because they're not an active worker.
But they can negotiate RAMSAC or pension plan to use the money to pay for buyouts and early retirements.
Yep, and they negotiated to take your guys' Christmas bonus away.
Yeah. Yep. And on top of that, I mean, okay, you can't negotiate for retirees. There's a lot of active workers that still have pensions. So how come they're not negotiating to increase our pensions? If they increased our pensions, I would think that it would have a positive effect on the retirees as well.
Correct.
Right.
I think it's great they're
getting a ballot, but my opinion is I think they should be allowed to vote at contract time.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
They're afraid of us. They've been afraid of retirees for decades.
Yeah.
And see, it would reach the point where retirees far outnumber workers.
Right.
Yeah, and it's getting to the point where Tier 2 and the 10s are going to outnumber Tier 1.
Right.
And then they're going to come in with the Tier 3, and they're going to push out Tier 2. And it's going to be so on and so forth, because we have to be viable and competitive with China's labor market, Mexico's labor market, and Indonesia's.
But so China.
That's the bill of goods the union's selling to us.
Well, I'm just telling you what the company's saying, and the leadership's allowing it.
I'm going to get Adrian on right now, wherever she went. Here she is, I think.
In the past 4 years, I know Ford is making over 4 models, brand new models, in Mexico. So the international isn't giving us no job security.
No, they ain't.
I mean, you got a Bronco that's made down the road from me, and the other Bronco, the Bronco Sport, is made in Mexico. And how do you make a Mach 3 Mustang in Mexico when you got
Brad
Rock over there starving for work?
Right.
Come on now. People need to wake up. I mean, these contracts are junk.
And you guys want to keep the Delicate system?
If they didn't think they had any shit on your mouth, explain to me how you have full-time temporary workers that get 40 hours or better every week. How the hell is that temporary? Excuse me.
Not just that. How is it that you had those temporary on full-time jobs and you put them on all the easy jobs instead of posting those jobs to top seniority people because you're trying to circumvent top seniority rights by putting the top seniority on the harder job so you can basically force them to quit, and you're putting these temps on full-time easy jobs.
Yep. That's the inside of fucking dog. Excuse me, people, but that should never happen. The man's correct. Our seniority used to be the dividing factor in how we got our jobs, and as we got older, we got more seniority, so we got a better job. They did take that away from us, and that was our dignity.
From Adrian.
Hello.
Hello.
Adrian.
I'm listening. I'm listening because everything that you all are saying is correct, is true. But one thing, they started circumventing seniority rights back in the 70s. It was subtle. And it just rolls over. But everything else that you said is right, is spot on.
Yeah. It's not
so
just...
you're saying so Jimmy Settles started that back in the 70s?
I don't know if it was Jimmy Settles, but I'll tell you, it didn't just happen at Ford. It was happening everywhere.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. All of automotive.
But it's more so with the temps nowadays, though.
Well, let's look at the temps. You know, there was always temporary workers.
Yes.
No. Different facilities. Like, I could tell you about Ford. At Ford,
okay.
Our assembly building had temporary workers in it. I could tell you that at GM, Detroit Diesel had temporary workers. Now, the temporaries, they hired them for vacation replacements.
Yes.
You know, the sick, the medical leave.
We call them SBRs.
Yeah. So, and then whenever there was a job that became available, a full-time job, they would give them first preference if they wanted to become full-time. Now, a lot of them would turn it down because they were making the top, whatever the top money was, they were making the top money. If they came in as a permanent hire, then their money would drop down and they would have to, you know, do everything to get it up to the top dollar. I would tell you that in the 90s, no, in 2007, when they started bringing them temps, the tiers in, then they reclassified the way that they did temps at that time. Now it was no longer that you stay a temp. You advance after you got so many hours. How they did that, I don't know. I'm not going to do like most people do and start talking about, you know, you seniority people did this. But no. It wasn't just like that.
Right.
because I know that at Ford, you know, we had the opportunity to put names in for our family members and friends that wanted a job, and it was supposed to be a permanent job. This was 2007. Once they got them in there, they came up with, "Oh, you all, are, we're going to extend your contract." And they're like, "Extend what contract?" "Well, you know, you were just hired for 9 months." It was like, "What?" So it was a lot of game plan that I'll just say we as seniority didn't even know.
Yeah, I've always brought it up that they're always lying and deceiving the membership, and it's kind of hard to make an informed vote or an educated vote when your leadership is lying to you.
That's correct.
And how can you ask people to vote on a contract if you're only letting them see 1/16th of the contract? From what I've heard of John Deere, they're probably not going to see the whole contract before they're asked to vote on it. They're already dividing it up again. They shouldn't be able to do what they're doing and change the voting locations, in my humble opinion.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm somewhat confused about that, too. I mean, you all call it the white pages. I call it a rough draft. So if they have to.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, that's what we always called them before, was rough drafts. I don't know where these white pages came from. But anyway, if they go in and they're going to change something, they got to change those pages.
Well, this last time they didn't do that, what they did is they left the, and GM, I can only speak of, they left they left paragraph numbers there with just the old language scratched out, but no new language there. Now every time they get something rolling, if it's working good, boom, all of a sudden the ink's there. Yeah, it's in the contract, but they ain't even printed the contract up. And so how long did it take them, Scott, to get that thing out in the plant?
Well, these contract extensions are the problem. It used to be that if you didn't have a contract, you walked. When on September 14th or whatever the date was, if your contract wasn't complete, you were on strike. That's what's enabled them to do this crap. They extend the contract and they bargain for months and months. The contract deadline doesn't mean anything anymore.
And this way they're able to give away those concessions.
That's it.
So all those benefits that our forefathers fought for, they're gone.
Right.
Because what our present people are... the last 30 years, they've been just giving them back.
Yeah.
They haven't fought for them.
Well, they've got something in return. It's joint funds.
I'm not talking about what they got.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the membership. They did not fight for the membership. If you're not fighting for the membership, you ain't got no business there.
No.
Okay, and I mean, if all of this is kind of really simple.
Yeah.
If they would stop looking at that damn signing bonus and stop thinking about the bonus that they give every other year, that is crap. You don't want that mess. You want that money put on your hourly wage.
Right.
But for whatever the reason, people can't do the math. If you just took that $1,500 before they even take taxes, just take the $1,500 and divide it up for a year. And then take and say, well, you know, they give us 3%. We'll say 3% is 50 cents. Add that up and look at the bonus and look at what your wage would be. You'll see that you're on the losing end. It's too simple.
Yeah. But that money, you know, they always go for that money.
Yeah. They all that little dangling carrot and, oh, I'm going to get a bonus. Hey.
Yep.
And they all the bonus is taxed at, what, 40%?
Yeah. Well, is it 40 or 42?
So in reality, you're getting a quarter and a penny.
Right. Exactly.
Well, the Pennsylvania could hit you with a special dues. Don't forget about the special dues.
Oh, yeah.
That's
every
right.
time you get a bonus, a profit share, they get theirs, don't they?
I tell you what,
yep.
I could never understand that. We pay union dues for them to bargain for us, and then when they get us something, they get a double whammy on us. I don't understand.
That's right.
We allow that. I don't understand it.
I've never understood it either. But, yeah, they think that they deserve it. I don't think that they deserve it.
No. And
they
increased our union dues.
Oh, yeah, that was bullshit, too.
And that's even on top of the 31% salary increase.
Okay.
We don't want to forget all that.
Yeah.
Well, the sad thing was very few people spoke against that increase in union dues at the convention.
2015.
Yeah, the delegates had to know their members did not want to pay more in union dues.
No.
Matter of fact, when you look at the poor performance of the union, our dues probably should have been cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it was based on merit and performance... But they were setting the tone for that for several years by voting, by taking money out of the strike fund at every constitutional convention. There was, 2006 constitutional convention, they took $60 million out of the strike fund, put it in the general fund, and I was one of three people that spoke against it. When you got like over 1,000 delegates there, you would think more than three would speak up. And that, again, is a reason why people need to take this referendum seriously. It's a good way to put a stop to this kind of thing.
Right.
Because if they had real opponents to run against, they'd be much more careful about the things that they did, because it would be ammunition to use against them. Like this 31% pay increase? The membership wouldn't go for that.
No.
And they wouldn't vote
for
anybody.
I couldn't understand the delegates going forward.
Pardon me?
I couldn't understand the delegates going forward.
Yeah.
Well, I can, because the truck plant, you know, voted to send people that were already, like the vice president of our union. He got voted in to go. Of course they're gonna vote for that.
Yeah.
People,
but it's going against your own self-interest. It's still going against your own self-interest.
Not if you want to get on international staff, you're not. You're voting in your self-interest. You go down
Do you
there.
Think half them damn delegates going to get on the international staff?
No, but they think they might. They get a chance, you know, that's what they think. Now, I get a chance, I better keep voting the way they tell me to vote.
That's it.
That's the sad part for us.
It is.
You know,
it is.
It's
the sad part.
Yeah.
That's just how it is for right now.
The moral corruption, the legal corruption is bad enough that we got, 15 jailbirds, but the real problem is the moral corruption.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a cancerous sore.
Yes.
You try to get good people elected, and it happens often, but after they've been in there beating their head against the wall for a little while, they get the carrot and the stick. As if you want to go against the program, you're on your own. But if you want to buy into our program, here's your hours of easy overtime. Maybe your kid can get a job, and that's the way the system works. It's totally corrupt. That's why we need to be able to vote to elect our officers.
And then here's this other thing about, you find out that you have, what, about 200 locals or so that didn't even send delegates because they couldn't afford it?
Right.
Okay, well, that's a bunch of bullshit, too, because the international should pay for them.
Yeah.
Everyone is elected a delegate should be there.
Yeah. Well, they don't want them there because those the kind of people that would probably vote against their program. They're from small locals that are not benefiting from any of the things that are going on.
Right.
Oh, it's just sad. It's worse than sad.
Yeah.
We can't even put a damn name to this.
Yeah.
What we, you know, what we as members are going through.
Well, to me, it's just, I get incensed over the idea that there are people in my son's generation working in these plants for half the money I made 12 years ago, and they're being told, save your money for retirement and pay for your health care when you retire, and they're working the crap out of them. I don't know how anybody can work 40 years on a modern assembly line. I mean, you used to be able to get off the line, be a janitor, a relief person, or whatever, and they've just pissed all those jobs away.
Yeah, they gave them away.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't lose them as
a result of a long strike. They gave everything away. And all we got in returns was joint funds.
That's it.
Money for them to play with.
I remember hiring in 78, and I was looking at somebody. They were sweeping up something. I said, boy, how long you got to be in a plant? How much seniority you got to have for that? He said, right now you'll probably have to work here about 38 years, 38 more years. You'll make it.
That's
never,
right.
Never did anyone believe that we wouldn't have those jobs when we did get old enough to get them or get the seniority to get them.
I think time I went into labor relations and I counted we had something like 116 job classifications at the truck plant.
Jeez.
Around that time period.
Yeah, what is it now?
Two or whatever it is. You know, worker and leader, you know.
We had the truck plant only three.
Three.
We got three.
Good Lord. Three.
I know.
That's amazing. Boy,
yeah,
Annie's
been wanted.
Go ahead, Paul.
I said, you have the three that management wanted, and it wasn't just management that wanted to get rid of the seniority system. The union wanted this favoritism system where they can dole out easy work to their supporters.
Right.
Their families, their close friends.
Yeah, the more they gave up, the more appointed jobs they got. So that made them secure.
Yeah.
It's a fact.
They created invincible political machines.
Yep. They helped the management and they helped themselves. That's right.
Yep.
Pretty smart, you think about it. They did. You
and
know.
Then they unionized them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Somebody asked earlier, why would they ever vote them a 1% raise? Well, I think, isn't that about the time we found out that the people on the executive board were making more money than those guys that we're talking about? So they had to rectify that, I believe, pretty flipping quick. But I think that's the only reason. But I didn't, you know, and I hope that's not true. I can't verify that. It looks like if I'm Black's Law, and I'm not, but it looks like they get 31% for 4 years, people.
Yeah, and aren't their contracts negotiated differently than ours, too?
Yeah, they negotiate with themselves.
Yeah. So Lord knows what else they got going on top of the 31%.
Oh, well, don't forget they get their expense reports. You know, they get an expense account.
You mean like getting a chauffeur to drive you around? Because last time I checked, they all got the top ones got people driving them around. Because I used to work with a guy that went to international to drive for, it was one of the bigwigs in the international. He was a family member, and when we transferred to the truck plant, they moved him to international to drive as a chauffeur for him.
Hello?
But, I mean, that's just some of the wasteful spending. I mean, if you look at some of those LMQs that come out, you're seeing people that are typists making $55,000 a year. What do you need a typist for?
Well, they have to have clerical staff at the UAW.
Yeah, like a secretary. But when you gotta have a typist? Because there was a secretary on there too.
Well, see, some of the secretaries are executive secretaries. Now, there's a difference. Okay, I'm not saying it's right. Okay, let me make that clear. But you have some secretaries that cannot take shorthand. You have maybe some secretaries that don't type by dictaphone. I mean, there's a lot of little things that go in that. So...
Well,
just like at our local, there
are
two.
Maybe the people that are on those jobs need to go back to school so they can fully do their job, because they got a lot of time to waste.
No, they need to hire proper people. They're not hiring proper people. That's where the problem lies. You know, not that they go,
they
get a job and then go back to.
And they need to check all the boxes then. That way we're not wasteful spending if you get a position and you can't type or dictate or whatever. That should be on their application. It's just a lot of wasteful spending. And then you got the people that are in here making less money. What about them? You know? Maybe we should share the joy out here for our care workers.
Yeah, there's a lot of wasteful spending in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I talked to Brian earlier just a little bit. And I was trying to explain with Solidarity House, why are we running? I know, I understand they're under renovations, but why are we running new facilities to do the union business at, and some of that extra money? Why are we not back in Solidarity House yet?
Solidarity House is for sale, listed on the real estate market. It has been for quite some time. Just I can't find out if it's even been sold. It possibly has been sold by now. That riverfront property, people there, that's worth a lot more than we could ever think of.
Oh, yeah, it's very valuable. Very,
yeah.
Very valuable.
me and Adrian talked about that, and you know exactly
yes,
what the hell I'm saying.
Yeah. I just saw something on the news. I think that was last week about that GM training center.
Yeah, the one over by the Warren Tech Center.
No. The one that's off the Detroit River, off of Jefferson down there.
When I guess it's cold. I don't know.
Oh man, it's a beautiful place. I mean, because they did a walkthrough and everything, let you see all of that, and I forgot how many millions of dollars that place went for. So if that's going for, what did they say? We'll just say if that went for $10 million, the Solidarity House would go for more than that.
You talking about where the old boathouse used to be?
I don't know
just
if that's
north
the old boathouse.
Just north of Solidarity House, like two blocks, right on the river. They called it the old boathouse because they used to store all our records there. I had to go down there once to get a bunch of them educational binders for that Jokic put out way back when and described the first 76 paragraphs of our contract and backed it with umpire decisions so you could use it inside the plant. Very helpful, but, you know, that was back, like I said, that was back when you had a union that wanted to help you.
I don't think this is the old boathouse. This building is, it's a brown brick building, I can tell you that. And it was gated. Did they say they had enough? The parking structure was underneath. And they had enough parking spaces, 900 parking spaces, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
I say, it's beautiful on the inside. You know, I don't know. I kind of throw my hands up with this. I haven't went to my mailbox, so my ballot is probably out in my mailbox. I'll get it tomorrow.
I didn't get mine yet.
Yeah.
When do they have to be in?
29th of November.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know.
Or postmarked before the 29th?
No. They have to be in there.
Ooh,
not
boy.
Postmarked. They have to be there. Mm-hmm. Now, and somebody said something about having to sign the ballot.
I don't know.
I was talking to someone today, and they were telling me somebody told them that you had to sign the bottom of the ballot. I'm like, you know,
I have
why
no
would
idea.
You have to sign
there's
a
nowhere to
ballot?
Sign it. All you got to do is mark the circle with a black pen, and that's it.
Oh, okay.
Brian's already
got it. I know
that
didn't sound right.
I want to get 313 on. I think this is 313. You are on. How you doing, bud?
Good evening, folks. I'm at work again.
Hey, 313.
You making that money?
At work. Yeah.
Good evening, Brian. Glad to see you on the show tonight.
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm loud, so I mute myself so Don doesn't have to.
Okay.
I don't know what the hell he said, but I think I got slammed. I don't know.
You wish.
He said he's muting himself so you don't have to do it.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm up on you. That's what I should do.
Come on, clean your ears, Don.
Ah, damn it, Mama. No, I got old ears. Come on. Give me a break. I've got two hearing aids.
You're not old.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, he is. Moby Dick was just a minnow when he was born.
Scotty, for you in the stadiums. F. Scotty.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. You're forgiven.
So, well, all I can say is we just need to say vote in favor of direct voting. We do not want to keep it the same.
Nope.
Well, you keep it the same, you get the same results.
Thank you.
If not worse. Please.
Give it a shot.
Yeah.
We can always change it if need be, but I don't think you will want to change it. I think you'll like being able to pick your next president and vice president and everybody. It'd be nice. That would be very nice to do that, wouldn't it? Oh, man.
Right.
That would be so nice. And my vote can be bought. I'm just putting it out there, folks. My vote can be
bought.
Mine
too.
There you go. Me and this. You can bid on ours.
It's
going to
start with the number M. You can pay me billions.
Oh, yeah.
Just say that you want seven figures.
Amen, sister.
Yeah, I'll take three figures. I'm easy.
What'd you say? You take three? Oh, no.
Three,
hell no.
Three,
that
three.
Ain't enough.
Oh, yeah. Start saving. No, we got to get this passed. I know I got some emails from tier people that want to know why should they vote? Why should they vote for direct? And I explain to them. I write them back and explain why. And they just don't get it. They don't understand.
Oh.
And some retirees saying, I don't want to be involved with this. Damn.
Yeah.
What the hell do you mean you don't want to be involved? You think the union screwed you over? This is a good chance for you to get back at them.
Yeah, I might get your Christmas bonus back if we have responsible leadership.
Yes.
Yeah, you might
come after 8. Insurance when you retire.
Right.
Yeah.
Get all those concessions back. I mean, there's some concessions we know we won't get back, like your birthday off, your anniversary day off. We know we ain't going to get that back.
There's probably a lot.
COLA and pensions and...
COLA, wouldn't that be sweet?
Yes.
That would be real weird.
COLA for all. It's like that. I just don't understand.
I mean, John Deere got COLA back.
Yeah, that's what I see.
Yeah.
That was in their contract. That was nice to see. I don't know what else. They must have got screwed somewhere else, but at least they got COLA.
Well, the COLA was frozen, and they just reinstated it, this tentative agreement that they voted down. They also got something like the job bank, like what we used to have.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but they're only getting paid like $19, $20 an hour, so they're definitely not making the money.
Well, when you look at other unions like the Teamsters at UPS, when they retire, they don't have any Social Security carve-out. They get like $4,000 a month plus their Social Security.
That's right.
And, people don't realize that we've been screwed so badly by the UAW and management. People don't realize other unions haven't taken these kind of concessions. You know, they wanted to bring team concept in the UPS, and, the union rejected that.
Yeah.
See, that's the problem with John Deere is you got the pre-97 that make a full pension, then the post-97 that make a partial pension, and then the post-2021 that make no pension.
Right.
Crazy.
So, I mean, that's one of the main reasons they're out there fighting, because they want to make sure they take care of those that are coming in after them.
Right.
Making more trucks with less people and paying a quarter of the workforce peanuts. Boy, they're making money hand over fist.
And it's an accelerated work base. There's no way you're going to hire in a plant at 18 years of age. And what is it? You got to be 70 to retire now, or 72 under Social Security. How are you going to put in over 50 years on an assembly line?
Not going to do it.
I mean, they in the agreement just before I retired was when they came up with the screwball concept of core and non-core work.
Yeah.
You know, the non-core work was the stuff you did when you were too beat up to work on an assembly line. It could be a janitor, be a, you know, relief man, have a sub-assembly job, be a booth
right.
cleaner, you know, whatever. And all those, the only way off the assembly line now, basically, is a pointed job or leader. And a lot of people don't want to be a leader because they don't want to be doing management functions. Most of the things that leaders do now used to be management jobs.
Yeah, they do paperwork.
Yeah. And they start to think like foremen, too, after they've had all this responsibility dumped on them, and many of them treat their coworkers worse than a foreman would.
Some of them do. That's true. Some of them do. I haven't had one before, but I've seen some that won't even get off their ass. You're right about that.
Yeah.
Explain to me, because, you know, I've heard about this new Social Security rule. That's full Social Security at 70, whatever it is?
My daughter will get full. Oh, yeah, my daughter will. My youngest daughter, she was born in 89. She told me she now has to work until she's 71.3 for full Social Security. They can still go out. I don't know. It's at like 64 with a reduced or something. But I was utterly amazed. But then I looked at mine. And my language actually added 1 year, because it was 65 for me. But now if I had to go, I'd be 65 years old in 1 month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Jesus, I couldn't make it. Oh, no, I couldn't make it.
Mm. Oh, no, no way. My hand's been up too many times.
I'm older than you, John, I believe, because I'm a child of 1958. Let's just leave it there, old man.
I'm 60.
I'm so old that his retirement age was 24.
A smart ass.
Yeah, no, Jim, you're a little younger than Don and I.
Yeah. Me and Adrian were the same age, okay?
Right.
And I ain't holding nothing against me, even if it is downhill.
Well, that's why management wants this program. They know people can't survive to retire. They want a temporary workforce so they can work the crap out of them till they're really sore and beat up at, say, age 40, and then they go on and find another job when they can't keep up anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's why they don't stop putting this out. I'm putting this out on disability. They know they've worked the shit out of us. We're not even functioning in the plan enough to pay the bills for them at their rate of speed. Plus, they can, like the guy told me, he says, dude, you go, I get three kids in here to replace you that work a lot faster. I go, what? He goes, yeah, for what we pay you, I can get three kids in here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these folks better realize and vote direct, because they're going to need less people, a lot less people with these electric vehicles.
Here, here.
So you better be You better be wanting to put somebody in there that's going to fight for you.
Yep, I had so much fun when they punished me and put me on the frog. I had five young kids under the age of 20 working with me, and I was the prick. They'd get going, get me going. I get in the ladder. I just shut the whole thing down. What are you doing that for? Because I can. And they're like, huh? And then they got to see what I could get away with, and they're like, how did you do that? You know? You just got to work at pace. Don't kill yourself, and I would slow down, you know? And that's cool. How do you do that? And then, like I said, it worked out good. Let them see what union was about.
Yeah, I remember. I remember the senior kid saying, "Can't talk to the boss that way." I turn around, look at him, say, "And that's why you won't be remembered around here." Hey, I'm glad you brought up the EVs real quick. I just found this out Friday afternoon. Spring Hill has set up a memorandum of understanding, or it may be negotiated. I'm not completely sure yet. I've been trying to find out that the EV work will be third party only, an LLC.
Well, they're trying to outsource this out of existence.
Well,
I understand.
You're talking Tennessee there. They hate the union there so bad they would string them up with sheets on their head. Do you hear me?
I got you, but I'm just saying, that's what our UAW is allowing. And at what cost?
What haven't they not allowed? Anybody tell me something they haven't allowed? Well, I guess they did stop the GM workers and from staying a week or two more on strike to really earn something for those 85, 90 days, whatever the hell it was. Yeah, I guess. And then I look and see what they did to Volvo. They did the same thing to Volvo, basically, if I read right, is what they did to Chrysler back when they turned it down. They brought them a shittier contract back that they had to come back to and take.
Well, one thing they haven't given up is joint funds.
Jointness.
That's one thing they haven't let management eliminate.
No, every contract they've got more people on international staff. The LM2s approved that. That's so damn wrong, it's pathetic.
Right. Well, that's what they bargained for is appointed jobs.
Well, still, I don't know. This whole thing it's rotten in Denmark. I think the UAW is going along with this.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Are they going to the plant and spreading their gospel right now? Like I said, you remember Scott told us they wrote the letter to the monitor, but I got no response to that monitor.
No, I like I said, I kind of put a contact out there to see if I get an answer with what they've heard down there. That was verified through our CHOP chairman, by the way, at our plant. But that's happening in Spring Hill.
Oh, I agree with it. I know it's happening. I had heard they'd actually divided it up in three different areas or three different areas, certain colors, and there was certain colors on the floor that... Let's say, what do they want to call us, legacy workers? We can't even walk over there. And then they made a deal with the tradesmen, if they'll plan on retiring before this contract's up, they can cut a deal where they train another person to basically do their job.
Oh, my God.
The way they want it is if you... problem with your press and it breaks down, they come out there, they fix it, you watch it as the leader. Second time they come out, they look at it, you look at it, you both work together. The third time it breaks down, you fix it. It's all about all dumping everything back on the worker, you know, and that's the way it's going to be.
Wow.
Brian, are you still on here? Is Brian still on? Hey, yep. Did you ever get any feedback from anybody you try to contact didn't you try to contact people in the Solidarity House?
Yeah, I called the Solidarity House in Region 4, and nobody's ever called me back.
Yep. You know, I experienced that too myself. What was that, last year?
Yeah, it's more, it's more expected with me, though. they don't want to deal
so,
with me.
Yeah, but that, they shouldn't be like that, because if you are a union member in good standing and you pay your union dues, it doesn't matter who you are.
Well, I agree, and I am a good a union brother in good standing, but unfortunately, they don't want to deal with the hard questions. They don't know how to answer them.
Because if you try to call, from my experience with trying to call the regional and the Solidarity House last year, they would hardly, if you left them a message, it would take them weeks if they did call you back. And the Solidarity House never called me back.
Yeah, well, that's why the people need to support the direct vote, because if they're not going to sit there and return people's calls, and they're not going to take care of people's grievances, and they're just going to let people sit out there, they need to go.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, when you have a delicate system that just falls in line to support an increase in our union dues or to support a 31% salary increase for the international staff while the rest of us are taking concessions, that tells you that the delegate system has to go and we need to get the power back to the membership. And that's how you get the power back, through the direct vote, because that means every member will have a say on who leads this union.
And really, the union is supposed to be a democratic process, so why wouldn't you be able to vote on these?
Yeah, I mean, but it's not a democratic process, because if you know anything about the last convention or even the conventions before that, it's a controlled atmosphere. They disrupt the democratic process, and, they basically tell the majority of these delegates how to vote. They promise them something, or they target them if they don't.
So it's like a cult.
Yeah.
It's a cult.
Absolutely.
In the way,
I mean, you know, they think they're a mafia, you know.
Yep. And that's what happens when you get just one caucus or clique in office and you can't get them out.
Right.
This is the reason why we have to have one member, one vote, or direct voting.
Right.
Right.
Because it should never be just one particular clique in there, and they keep passing the baton amongst themselves.
Yes, yeah.
Right.
Agreed.
You're not going to represent all the members. You're only going to represent the ones that support the clique. So it's
you
not
right family.
Right.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
The other thing, all this nepotism, bringing the family members in there that don't know a damn thing. See, everybody's worried about, well, if we have the direct voting and it's one member, one vote, well, when they run, they don't know nothing. Well, you ain't looked and saw that they bringing their family members in and they don't know a damn thing? And yet, until they're making six-figure salaries, you haven't seen that. You don't pay attention.
Well, if you get a one-man, one-vote direct election, you're going to have qualified people running, because you're going to need some qualifications to get people to vote for you.
This is true. But,
wow.
You know, my thing is mix it up.
Yeah.
Mix it up. You know, it's We can't have this cliquish bullshit going on. We got too much of it. This is why we can't, we don't, we getting screwed over as members.
Right. Well, it's really joint funds that undermine the whole thing because it creates an army for local leaders. You know, it's very hard to win an election locally when you have all these appointees. You know, when you sign up and run for local office, you're not running against your opponent. You're running against their
political. You're running against the caucus.
That's right. You run against the caucus. You run against their appointed yes men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a tough row to hoe. And the thing is, if we could get some controls on this thing, I'm not in favor of doing away with all these appointed jobs, but I think they should be set up so the people serve the membership and not management. And they should either be elected or available by seniority, not by a favoritism system.
Well, they definitely should be qualified to do the appointed position.
And they shouldn't have to be answerable to some political godfather.
Well, and I think, too, is like some of the appointed jobs, even at your plant, like your health and safety reps,
right.
I don't agree with that because those people get in those spots and they get so comfortable that they don't go down and fight for the members.
Yeah.
They agree with management to make their life easier.
Yeah.
And those are that's an important job.
Yeah. Well, they're not like they used to be. Most people used to throw their weight around.
Right.
And management had a healthy respect for them as they'd shut the plant down.
Well,
right.
Maybe
they knew how to do it.
They got to get some qualified people in, not the ones that are sucking the butts of the chairman.
Yeah.
It's doing a disservice to the people that come in here and get their lines sped up or they get some extra added to their jobs. That's more wear and tear on those people's jobs. More injuries are going to happen.
Yeah. Exactly.
I got a problem. That's very dangerous. And when you get these health and safety reps that want to not do anything,
yeah.
Or you can't find them, or if they do wind up showing up hours after the fact, after the incident of injuries already happened,
right. Well, they used to be very confrontational with management, and our whole union establishment has been trained not to be that way now.
Yep.
Oh, Don.
Yeah, I agree.
Don, I can probably remember when a few shop chairmen ago, he got into it with the plant manager down at the end of the final line. He walked over and he stepped the stop button.
Yeah.
He stopped production in our plant. That lasted for, what, about an hour?
Yeah, hour and a half, I believe.
And pretty soon it was all over with and the line's back running and
everybody
got whatever he was after.
That's right. I thought about that. Yeah, you're right. Mark set that sucker right down in front of the plant manager.
Told him he ran the plant. We ran the plant, not him.
That's right.
And sent the safety man out to shut the docks down.
Yeah, he shut everything down.
Yep. But like you said,
yeah, that won't happen.
You don't have them no more.
It's not going to happen anymore.
No.
No, I can remember.
No.
When they would walk through the plant, they were just looking for something. And
actually, it did happen.
Yeah, it did it.
Yeah, you don't remember?
Who shut it down?
It happened last year. It happened last year when COVID hit. They walked out of the plant.
Yeah, COVID, yeah. Yeah. Get about COVID.
Warren Truck, Jay Knapp, and Shap all walked out.
I don't know what's going to
happen. I believe it could happen again.
Well, I do too. Well, it should be able, you know, that should be on the table to do, but I doubt it. I really doubt it. And, you know, Truck and Bus, I just don't think there's anybody in leadership that, and I know two of them, president and vice president, and I know the chairman, and I don't think either one of them have balls to do anything. And I'm surprised. I really thought one of them would be a good chairman.
I don't think so. A lot of them even know what power they really have under a union contract, because they've been, like I said, they've been trained to cooperate with management.
Yeah. All right.
I think what blew my mind the most, Paul, was when I found about, remember how we used to hear about, well, you know, the union's got a side agreement?
Yeah.
I got to see about 200 of them. They were the most ridiculous thing, and they had to negotiate them drunk, because every one of them let the management play paragraph eight. Hey, I'm going to do what I want while I see fit, and you ain't going to do shit about it. I mean, every one of them. And it was sad, but all we heard about, well, we got a side agreement, you know, never got to see that language. I got to see that language on some of them when we got back, but all that shit was, what do you call it, tossed out because of the bankruptcy.
Yeah.
But I think Adrienne, you know, when she found that on how when we extend our contract so that we let all these other things, and then they bring them back, that brings these bullshit side agreements and whatever other thing they want to initial them, call them, back to screw the worker. That's all they do. They should time out. Every concession should time out. Shouldn't be an extension of the next contract.
Correct.
Or when they say when they're negotiating, well, this is the best we can do. No,
yeah.
It's not. Get your asses back to the table and stop being lazy, you coward.
It's the best they can do in joint funding.
Yeah.
That's
and they get more appointments every contract. People, look at this. They get more people on international staff every time we get a new contract. But that's the best they can do for the membership. But, man, I can get my kid I just made here and get him a job.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We got about 2 minutes, folks. About 2 minutes. 2 minute warning.
Hey, Don.
Uh-oh.
Yes, Don, sir. I have a question for you.
Uh-oh. Go ahead, sir.
Does our phone number, full phone number, come up on a caller ID?
Yeah.
Could you call me right after the show?
Okay.
989-752. Yeah,
I got you.
Okay.
I got you. I'll call you right after the show then.
Okay. Well, then I'll
Paul, when you see a 976 number, that's Don.
Hold on for a minute, guys. Don't hang up yet. I got to find your number.
Okay.
Okay, I found it. I got it now. All right. I'll call you right after the show, buddy.
Okay.
All right, Paul.
Well, good night to you, Rabble Rosers.
Good night.
Good night, Paul.
Good night, Paul.
Uh-oh. All right.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We do. We hope you enjoyed it, because I did. Every time.
Peace, love, everybody.
Yeah.
Be safe. Have a safe week.
Yes.
Good night.
And,
yep.
Looking for that.
Don't forget to vote.
Direct
voting system.
Direct voting system.
Don't and if you don't have your ballot before the end of this week, call the monitor.
Yes.
Email the monitor.
Yes.
Do it by Monday.
Here.
Though.
And I'll give you that right now real quick. Is the number is 212-303-2529. That's 212-303-2529. Or email at UAW-monitor-election@Jenner. J-E-N-N-E-R. UAW-monitor-election@Jenner.com. So,
hey, Scott?
Yeah.
So you send out the notifications for the show every week?
Yeah.
Send that notification out too if you don't receive your ballot by the end of the week? So at least the people that listen to the show or usually listen to the show will know.
What do you mean again?
When you send out that notice for the show, just like that,
right?
Just send a reminder for all the members to make sure that they get their ballot this week, and if not, what avenue to go down.
Right.
Okay, the next time I post will be next Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, no, but post, just make a special post. I know that, you know, the farm can't be that busy right now.
Okay. I see you. A special post.
Before the show, you know, like sometimes they don't have their, ballot by the end of the week. Make sure and put the number down and the email down.
Right.
And all of us can put it on our pages that we have.
Right. 313,
right.
You got a good idea for one. I want some advice.
Yeah, it's kind of like Don when he's looking for that special woman again, that he's special post. The last one said, man, I don't remember.
Yeah, it's starting to hurt my feelings now.
Well, when I say when you gotta go, you gotta go.
Yeah. All right. I'll make a special posting.
Thanks,
right.
Scott. Have
good
a good weekend,
everyone.
Y'all.
You guys be safe. Okay.
Good night from DTP.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, at least I have a job for at least another month, maybe.
I hope so.
And then I'll be laid off. But then Santa can call me, and I'll just work for him until after Christmas.
There you go. I want to go where Paul said you make $41 an hour working at McDonald's.
Yeah, but that's in the restroom at McDonald's, and it's not a towel guy either.
I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, if you don't leave me alone, you're gonna have to send me home. 'Cause I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
All right.
Okay, guys.
Good night, y'all.
Safe, and we'll see you. We'll talk to you all again next Sunday night, 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, UAW Factory Whistle Show. And Patty, Jimmy, Adrian, Terry, 313,
Melissa,
and on behalf of Paul,
Melissa,
and Melissa, and all the Hee Hog King.
Don't forget Carrie.
And I said Carrie. Carrie,
but she likes to hear it twice.
I
do.
Well, I like to hear her.
Oh, God, here we go.
Well,
all right, John.
That guy got me listening to her voice, and it is sounding sexy, you know. Adrian, you go get the spanking, and we'll talk to everybody next Sunday night.
Good night,
everybody. Good night.
Good night.